Session number 26752, Reel 2.
Already?
Anka Bergman, Reel 2.
Now we wait for...
Yes, did you go on an ordinary train?
Ordinary train, no problem with that. But I mean, later on they did in animal, whatever, well, open wagons, but we did in an ordinary train from Prague to Terezin, which didn't take more than an hour or something on the train. Am I supposed to carry on? No, and we arrived, and we were put into barracks, and I never saw my husband then because they weren't allowed to come here and there and everywhere, but he came after and he got his donuts. If he ate them or not, I don't know. And everybody had to work, of course, because we were sort of pioneers, because we were the first ones. And we were promised by the Germans that whatever happens, and if some transports go away, they were very careful what they said. We will stay in Terezin. The group of the wives of those men who were sent first, you know, the first 1,000, and then we came, and they gave us this promise. And why we believed them, I don't know. But they kept it for 3 years. So we were one of the few people who didn't have to worry about the transports, which was quite unbelievable. That's why I kept saying probably, or I don't know, because, but of course your relations, your parents and all that, we couldn't do anything about that. But they weren't there yet. I will come to it. Well,
was that because you had special attributes, do you think, the people?
We were young and healthy. And the men who came to build the ghetto up were young and healthy. So it was an age group, let's say, between, let's say, 18 and 35, let's say. The most capable young people. And so we adjusted to that, and we didn't know anything about any transport, but the Germans put it very sort of nicely that it should people come and be sent away, so we won't. I don't know how they phrased, how they told us, but this was the gist of it, and they stuck to it for 3 years, which is unbelievable. Right, so we were in the ghetto and worked here and there and everywhere. And
what was your work? What were you doing, Anka?
First of all, I just had to keep order in one of the rooms where we were allocated about 12 girls or something. But from that job, very quickly, I was transported to a hospital because I got scarlet fever, of all things. And I was, at that time, we were kept in isolation for 6 weeks or something. And so I was in hospital, and it was, well, I had scarlet fever, I survived, and that was that. And then when I came out of that scarlet fever, I was put in a different room. But, I mean, they were all young girls who came in my transport, and I really didn't know anybody before, but if there are 12 of you or 16 of you in a room, so you get to know each other. We had two-tier bunks, I think, in that place.
So married couples weren't together?
Oh, no. The sexes were strictly separate. Anyway. And afterwards, when I came back, I started to work. There was one of the girls whom I met in that room, and she was working with food provisions for the kitchens, and she sort of employed me somehow or other. And I was in the little office in our barracks, but then I was transferred to other barracks, only to the office. Anyway, it was terribly lucky for me to get to this sort of job, because whoever tells you whatever, if you had an opportunity to steal something, so you did, like a potato or like a carrot or like more milk than you were allowed to. I don't want to say that I was an angel. I mean, if it, apart from it, I had at one time about 15 people there whom I had to take care of. My parents and my aunts and my, who were not elderly in today's looking at age, but sort of 60-ish. And they just were, they were totally lost. And of course I cared mostly about my parents, but my husband's father was there, whose history is quite interesting because he spent the First World War in the German forces, of course. He was blinded by gas in the First World War. He had the highest German medal, Eisernes Kreuz Erste Klasse. And he came from Hamburg to Terezin. But he had one advantage, as he was an old combatant and all that, that he, his place of living was better than the rest. You know, these people were the sort of prominence, Prominentenhaus, and he had a, he was in a room only with about two gentlemen, and they were all sort of people like him with German decorations and German. But he didn't have any more to eat than anybody else, and so we had to take care of him, of course. And then my husband's parents were divorced, and his mother lived in Holland because they had to, her family was, they were all of them in Holland. And she came much later, but I will come to that. Only he came on his own, and this old blind man, and he survived the war, and his son didn't. Because he wasn't sent any further, the father, as he was one of those privileged German combatants. I mean, it's all, they had such funny sense of honor, the Germans. No, but anyway, where are we? My father-in-law and my parents and my two sisters came, and the little boy came in September 42, and my parents in December 42, and my sisters were sent away in September 43, and my parents in December 43. And obviously I never saw them again, but I didn't know that. But and they were going to Auschwitz, which was a name. But we did a name. So we all thought, well, perhaps it's worse than Terezin, but you didn't know. But meanwhile, still in Terezin, I became pregnant with my first child, and when it another five couples were in the same position, because to come pregnant to Terezin was allowed, or to have a little child with whom you came from wherever, that was allowed. But to become pregnant in Terezin, how is that possible? That was a crime, sort of. And we had to sign a paper. First they wanted to abort the children, but we were too far gone, and they sort of said, all right, we won't abort them, but when they are born, the children, they will be taken away. And somehow they let us know, I don't know if in so many words, they used the expression euthanasia, which I had never heard before, but I knew afterwards what it was. And we signed this paper. The five couples whom I'm talking about, five or six, I can't remember exactly. But then it never happened. I don't know why. They didn't do anything. The children were born and everything. All right, they were born. Only my little boy died after 2 months of pneumonia. Nobody killed him. I mean, he died a normal death, let's put it. I mean, he wasn't killed, that's what I want to say.
Well, what sort of help would you have got, you know, being in this situation in the ghetto and being pregnant? Would you have been given any extra food by any group within there, or sort of antenatal care?
No, first of all, you had to hide it, and then you couldn't hide it anymore, so nobody cared two hoots. And I mean, they wanted us to miscarry, but I mean, not one of us miscarried. But there we are.
But the other thing, which is interesting, that you'll think me very nosy, but you weren't living with your husband.
No.
How did you get pregnant? You had arranged meetings, did you?
Well, I mean, it sounds incredible. We were all sort of a normal middle-class people brought up in a normal way. And let's say we were 12 girls in this room, and sometimes 12 men slept there. But I mean, you lose all the sort of inhibitions or anything, and nobody listens to anybody, and nobody looks at anybody. It's unbelievable, but it's true.
I suppose it's just a very different norm of living, is it not?
And apart from it, I mean, that this was the only lovely moment of whatever. We were all young and healthy. And when I see it in front of me, all these men and all these girls, and as I say, sometimes there were, instead of 12, 24 people in the room doing. Yes, but all right, so my child died, and I became pregnant the second time, but this time consciously, sort of, because the first one was probably a mistake or something. But
it's interesting that you wanted a child.
I didn't want a child when the first was born, yes. But then when he died, I didn't know about Auschwitz or anything. So we thought, now listen to this marvelous philosophy, that if we come back, because by then it was after the invasion of the mainland Europe after the 6th of June, 44, and we thought, because my child died in, my little boy died in April, 44, and in June was the invasion, and then we started thinking, by then we were allowed to live together if we could find ourselves a little room somewhere. And so we had one of those little rooms somewhere in the roof, and it was marvelous and all that. And we thought that if we come back to Prague, we never thought of anything else. From Terezin, we go back to Prague. Either I would be pregnant or the child would be born, and that would be marvelous because we will come to nothing. And if we come to nothing, we would think about it three times to become pregnant or to have a child. But like that, it would be there. So we would have to take care of it. This is the philosophy. Marvelous. I was all for it. Right. It happened. But I mean, it must have happened either end of July or beginning of August or something. So by the time my husband was sent away in September, I am sure I wasn't sure, and I never told him because I wasn't sure. So he never knew. He left Terezin on the 28th of September, and I never saw him again. But I didn't know that then. And I sort of had an inkling. I knew I was pregnant, but I didn't really. But what I did then, because when the men left on the 28th of September, the Germans let us know that anybody can go of their own free will to follow your husband, because they will be we would be meeting them in a different place, which is very much like Terezin. It may not be as, they didn't say that, but we thought it won't be as easy as Terezin for us, but we have lived through that. Why not live through? I mean, we were supposed to go somewhere near Dresden, and they didn't name the place either. They just alluded to it, you know. But anyway. So I was one of the first one to go, and I needn't have gone because I was in a sheltered work at that time. I was working in sort of Do you know what mica is? This thing for the stoves or something. Yes. Mm-hmm. Apparently that was needed for the aeroplanes or something if you cut it very thin, and we were doing that. And that was the one of the places where I could have stayed until the end of the war. I knew that, but I was one of the first one to go. No, all right, so we were sent away on the 1st of October 44.
Before you tell me about that, would you mind if I asked you a few more questions about Terezin?
No, not
because
at all.
Because one hears that there was a cultural life going on there. Is that right?
That was quite fantastic. Because there were so many artists and musicians and actors. And the longer it got on, the more the Germans wanted the Jews to do whatever they could in that respect, because it was the showpiece to show the world how marvelously they treat us, and they allow concerts and operas and theater and you name it in that respect. And they were this Jewish talent which was very abundant, and it was incredible. And the painters, I mean the artists, I just don't believe it, really. And the Verdi Requiem, which was produced by some, that was a dreadful story, really, because there was a conductor who studied it and worked on that sort of things in Czechoslovakia, and then he formed a chorus and soloists and all that, but in between a transport to the east to the east came, and his soloists were gone, and half of his choir had gone, and he had to start again. I am talking only about the technicalities of that, and he started again, and in the end it came to the first public performance of Verdi's Requiem with all the trimmings and everything, and the Germans came to listen what the Jews can do. I wasn't at this first performance, I saw another one, but I mean, so they performed it, and all the hidden meaning in it was stressed, but I mean, it was not for the Germans to recognize and all that, and they finished. And now they wait. There was some Jewish audience there, but in the first two rows were the Germans. And now they waited. It was over, and he turned around. I don't think he bowed. I don't know that. They waited if one should applaud or not, because. And the Germans started to applaud. Well, you can't imagine the irony in all that, and the absolute stupidity. The Germans came for the performance, and they applauded, and they left, and the Jews applauded, and everybody was in tears. But it was magnificent. Or I saw the Bartered Bride, but only as a concert performance there. And this is the Czech National Opera, really, the Bartered Bride. And to hear it there, and there is one exchange of words in Czech, and I'll start crying now, but which says the pair are worried, will they get married, won't they get married, and they say, how will it end, says she. And he answers, well, and it was so full of meaning. I mean, I don't get very emotional very often, but this is unforgettable. How will it end? Well. And the whole Terezin was beside themselves. It will end well. These are little bits which are my personal, because my life wasn't all that very hard, because we were young and we could do whatever we could do, and we knew the ways how to get potato more or not to take to your mouth, mother or father or uncle or father-in-law or something like that. So I really worried about if I will make it during lunch hour to get around all of these people who waited for that potato. I mean, it was quite awful, really. But there we are. But I mean, nothing happened personally to us. But then, of course, my sisters went, and my little nephew went, and my parents went. And by then I was highly pregnant when my parents went in December 43. And my child was born in February 43. And I told you the story about the child and that he died 2 months later.
Would you have been there during the Red Cross visit?
Yes.
Could you tell me about that?
Yes. Well, the Red Cross visit was announced or something, and the transport started going much more often than before because they wanted to get rid of all the sick and old and decrepit and all that. And the houses alongside the main road were being painted white, and there was a park established and a coffee house with music, and only young people were allowed to go out who looked sort of healthy, and it was incredible, absolutely incredible. And if the Red Cross hadn't been so short-sighted, or I don't know what, they would have had to see through it, but they didn't. They described it afterwards like a real achievement. And the children's homes, and the toys, and the merry-go-rounds. And as soon as the Red Cross left, it was all dismantled, of course. And we were told pretty strictly that not to say a word, only everything is fine, and we have enough food, and we are allowed to do this. And the cultural things were there. I mean, the theater was there, and the concerts were there, and the operas were there. And the painters were allowed to paint. But only what the subjects mustn't have been, weren't allowed to be controversial, but that they what they did in their free time or whatever, that so many of those pictures were discovered afterwards. And actually, the one of the very, very great painters, whose name was Fritta, he became very friendly with my husband. Fritta was his surname. When they came to Terezin much later than us, with a little boy and a pram, his wife and a boy and a pram. And when the boy outgrew the pram, I was just having my baby and I inherited the pram. I had a proper pram, which is unbelievable. Or things like that. Or, I don't know, are you musical? So perhaps the name Ancel means something to you. He was the director of the Czech Philharmonic after the war. Where he came with his first wife and a little child, and I was distributing milk. And I liked them. I didn't know them. I mean, I knew the name, but he wasn't so prominent then. So I liked them, and I gave them more milk than I should have, without any reason. And, well, his wife and the child died, and it was awful, really. But Karel Ancel was a very good friend of mine, and then I knew his second wife and all that. You know, I just liked that little boy. So I wanted him not to be hungry, as I could sort of lift that ladle twice or something. I don't know. But I mentioned it because I thought you would know the name.
Yes, there must have been vast talent there.
Enormous. Like but in every respect, really. And it was so concentrated. Or in the medical sense, the doctors, everybody was a doctor. I mean, there weren't any medicines or all that. Or there were dentists there as well. And I still have one filling from Terezin. You know, it's so contradictory in every respect. That was that. And the summer came and I the summer 44. Or did you want to ask anything else?
I was just wondering, you were saying about the hangings, these sort of demonstration hangings in the beginning. Were there any other terrible happenings apart from the deportations, you know, to keep the wall?
No, not anything like I described at the beginning, because I am sure it was meant for us to get hold of ourselves and of not expect anything, that nothing can happen to us, let's put it that way. And then, of course, the transport went, and
were
sometimes...
Were they done brutally? How were they organised, the transports?
You got the sort of a call-up paper from the council, from the Jewish council. You be there and there, tomorrow, whatever, you can take 20 kilos with you or nothing at all. At the station, you are being transported. No, nobody said where. But by then, the word Auschwitz was known, but we didn't know anything about it. Auschwitz, all right, it's worse than Terezin, but as we could survive Terezin, perhaps one can survive that. But I didn't tell you, which I am very selfish, because the old people in Terezin and the children couldn't survive. On the Russians, they had... That's why I'm talking so much about my running around every day with something to eat for my nearest and dearest, because the Russians were less than adequate. It was inedible. Terrible. And the old people died like flies. And dysentery and things like that. And if you are weak and can't sort of get yourself anything to stop it, it was just awful. So you may get a totally wrong impression by my describing Terezin, because for young people it wasn't that bad. But I am the best example of that. I will come to that, the best example. So yes. Do you want to ask me anything special?
Yes, if I could just... You mentioned the Jewish Council.
Yes.
The Judenrat, is that right? How did they perform, do you think? You know, as a young person in your position, being there over 3 years... But what is your view of the Judenrat?
They had the most dreadful job ever, because they had to obey the Germans, however they were against whatever they were supposed to do. They had to deliver the 1,000 peoples for every transport, and everybody tried to shield his mother and his father. This is quite human, isn't it? So there was a lot of wrangling. No, I can't say corruption. Nobody could corrupt anything by anything. But this is the most dreadful job you can have, to be on the Jewish Council. And the bosses of the council, they all died by the shot or something. Because the responsibility, and if you just deviated slightly, they were the ones who were visible. I can't say anything about anything because I don't know, and they had the most dreadful job you can imagine. That's all I can say.
End of reel 2, Anke Bergman.
I'm sorry.